Blog Talk Radio.
The scriptures clearly teach is that we, as believers, should know history. God tells us in passages like Romans 15:4 and Isaiah 43. He tells us also in 1 Corinthians 10 and Hebrews 11 and Psalm 73 and 78 and so many other places. He says to recall the former days, to remember the former times. Throughout the scriptures, we see that when a people remembers their history, they behave differently than when they forget their history. We see that even recovering histories, in the case of Josiah and the temple, leads to a national revival. Or in the case of Esther and Mordecai, the use of history by the king one night kept Mordecai from being hanged on the gallows and thus preserved the nation. So history is huge. God is into it. But in America, we don't do a good job of knowing our own history, and we need to. The scripture says that his people perish for lack of knowledge. We've been taught in America for years that what we're about is economics. We formed this nation because of taxation without representation. We need to know our history better. Taxation without representation does appear in the Declaration of Independence, but it's only one out of 27 issues that appear there. There's also religious issues. There's moral issues. There's so many other things than what we just hear today on economics. We need to go back and see that we were founded in this nation. Four clauses of the Declaration say that they didn't want activist judges. Two clauses say they wanted to end slavery. We have clauses over preserving the right to have Bible societies and other religious exercises. So as Christians, we need to know our history. We don't need to just go with what we've been taught. We ought to go back and read the documents. It's one thing to be taught what the Bible says. It's another thing to read it. So I challenge you. Follow up on what God says in the Scriptures. Know our history. Recall the former days. Let's go back and look at some of the patriots we had that were such strong Christians that are leaders that we don't even hear about today. So I challenge you. Do some research. Go to websites. Look at things that will tell you about your faith history as a Christian. It's important you know that so that you know how to behave today.
Listeners to City on a Hill, we're so grateful that you've tuned in, and as always, we ask that you share the show with your friends and family throughout the country so that you can learn with us. And today we have an amazing guest, and really with a lot of attention in Washington towards the IRS, I think this topic is so timely. It's time for a change. And but I'm going to turn the show over to Ms. Barbara Moore, our co-host, and I'm going to listen in. As I have been having computer problems, bandwidth problems, I'm just going to turn this over to Ms. Barbara to host the show, along with our other co-host, Ms. Dawn Wildman, who I know loves the topic and will want to really get in and find out what all is in the details of the flat tax that Mr. Stephen Eldridge has in store for us, and he studied it. So with that in mind, I'm just going to listen to y'all and turn it over to Ms. Barbara. So hi, Mr. Stephen. Hi, Dawn. And sorry to say goodbye, but I'm going to listen in and not mess y'all up. So Ms. Barbara, over to you. Well, I thought I was going to turn it over to Ms. Barbara, but I don't hear Ms. Barbara. Ms. Barbara, do you not hear me? Okay, she had problems too last week. She could, but anyway, Dawn, if you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and start us off with a prayer, and I'm going to turn it over to you. I think I have to get off so that Ms. Barbara can take over. I'm guessing that's what's wrong. So, but anyway, I'm going to go ahead and start us off with prayer, if you don't mind, Dawn, and then let you and Ms. Barbara take over, okay?
That's fantastic.
Okay, thank you. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, we thank you that you are God and nothing is hard for you. We thank you, Lord, that you send us the help that we need, Lord. You're such a loving God, and you, Lord, you do not want us to perish for lack of knowledge. And Lord, how timely is it that you bring Mr. Stephen Eldridge to us at this time so that, Lord, we can reason together because you want us to learn from you. And Lord, you have put wisdom in this man about the tax rates of this nation, Lord, and Heavenly Father, we thank you in advance for the information he's going to share between him and Dawn and Ms. Barbara. And Lord, we ask that you be Lord over the show. We thank you in advance, Lord, and we ask this in the mighty name of your precious Son, Jesus Christ. Amen. And let me go ahead and say this, Don, just in case we cut you all off for some reason when I hang up. Please call back, Mr. Eldridge. If for some reason you get cut off, just call back, and Ms. Barbara will call back, and I believe she'll be able to take over if there's any problems. So here I go. Go ahead, Don.
Well, thanks, Diana. Hi, Mr. Eldridge. We're so thrilled to have you on. And I looked at I'm sorry I didn't get back to you by phone. It was a crazy week last week with the IRS story breaking and everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in the Tea Party, it has made your world kind of even more interesting, is the word.
Sure has.
Than it did before. But I looked at some of the things you had sent over for me to look at. And you know what? I think I'm probably like the average American, that I really don't understand the taxes and how things are set up. I mean, I know that I constantly have to pay more. I know that my city, my state, the federal government are constantly wanting more of my money. And there has been a lot of talk over the last, well, for a long time, but especially I think more highlighted the last 5 or 6 years about a flat tax. So if you could start by just telling us, what exactly would a flat tax be?
Well, let's make sure we understand what we're talking about, a flat tax, because some people confuse the fair tax. They call the fair tax a flat tax. And so let's get that point straight. First of all, I'm not talking about the fair tax. The fair tax is a national retail sales tax. That would cause, for example, in Alabama, about a 40% retail sales tax on everything you buy. And that is some people think that's flat because it's a single rate, but that's not what I call a flat tax. That's the retail sales tax proposal, and it's the most awful thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I've studied it for hundreds of hours, and we can come back to that if you want to, but I want to get that off the table. What I'm talking about a flat tax, is really a flatter income tax. It's still income tax, but it's flatter than what it is today. So that's point one. I'm not sure which flat tax you are liking, Dawn, but right now there has been one flat tax in Congress for the last 4 years, and that was Senator Shelby of Alabama's. He put in S-173 about 4 years ago, and he has no co-sponsors to date. But I've been talking to people, and I don't know, I'm sure it's not because of me, but just about a month ago, we had a flat tax, flat income tax, introduced in the House of Representatives by Dr. Burgess. And as you know, the tax bills have to start in the House of Representatives, which we hope will be the undoing of Obamacare. But so now we have two bills that are virtually identical. There are some differences, and we can talk about those and some improvements that I'd like to make in those. But essentially, they are both a flattening out of the current Internal Revenue Code, a simplification, which I think is the right way to go. It's not my ideal, but it is a gigantic improvement over the system we have today. It's cutting down, taking a chainsaw to the current Internal Revenue Code.
Okay, and what would that look like? Say that all of a sudden everybody or a bunch of people jumped on to co-sponsor that bill and said, you know, this is starting to sound like a better and better idea, especially
right.
As we keep circling the porcelain fixture about what exactly is going on at the IRS. What would that look like for the average American?
Well, okay, I'm glad you said that. The average American does need to get involved here because Congress doesn't want these things to change. The Congress makes money off of the complexity. We have to demand a change. The system that these two people have proposed, H.R. 1040 and S-173, starts off by reducing the number of items subject to taxation. Basically, they only have salaries and wages and unemployment benefits and retirement income and business income. So they severely limit the number of items that are subject to tax. I think that's going to cause some problems, but I'll come back to that. So it's first smaller items of income. Then the core of both of those is that they eliminate all income tax deductions, except that both of them have a flat family allowance.
So one of the bills says it has about $40,000 in allowance for a family of four. The other bill has $46,000. So basically, you'd have these few items of income. You deduct your, for a family of four, $40,000 or $46,000, and you pay your tax. And they would have you pay tax at a tax rate of 17%. That's the essence of what these both of these flat taxes do. So again, they do not purport to get rid of anything other than the income tax. This is, they don't replace the payroll tax. They don't replace the any other tax but the income tax. So that's
what
essentially what it comes down to for an individual.
Okay, so if you have a set certain rate, then that you get instead of all the deductions, meaning.
Right.
You know, student loan, mortgage,
right,
equity,
right, right.
All that.
Right.
So every family basically would get the same sort of write-off.
Well, yes. I have a problem with that I'd like to talk to you about, but yes, essentially yes. Everybody, and it's based on a per person. It's so much per individual.
So here's
like one of the bills.
My big question, because this is when everybody's going to ask.
Right.
Excuse me. So we know there's a pretty significant portion of Americans that don't pay any tax at all.
Right.
What are we going to do with these folks?
Well, you ask the right question, and what is important in life is asking the right question. I think personally that it is intolerable, it is unsustainable. We cannot preserve this republic when half the people pay no income tax and yet they vote. And here's my preferred change to the two bills that are in Congress. I would take that rate and drop it to 10%, the tithe, I call mine the tithe tax, which is very popular now. And to do that, I take that exemption and eliminate it, the exemption. Everybody pays from dollar one of their earned income.
Okay.
No exemptions, no deductions. And by the way, I forgot to mention that these bills are very brave as far as they go, and they do what I would do. They eliminate all tax credits, including the outrageous refundable tax credits. So everybody who has income would pay 10% from dollar one. That's my answer to the question you've raised. And
okay,
we have to...
What does this look like at the end of the day as far as the federal government? We know that the whole reason they raise taxes is just so they have more money to spend.
Right.
We totally understand that if you do the basic math,
yes.
That most non-discretionary spending is X amount.
Yes.
Discretionary spending is X amount. And most of the cost that keeps going up, up, up for us are the entitlement programs.
Yes.
So what does this do to the bottom line for the federal government? Because my thought is, okay, so if you know that there's a flat tax, we can have an expectation that we have X amount of taxpayers paying X amount of money. That's a pretty solid number, right?
Well, if you base it on income, it will change from year to year.
I don't mean it's a static number that, you know, I do see that it would change, but we have a pretty good estimate of what we would have as an expectation of revenue coming into the federal government. So we would pretty much know at that part, okay, how much do we have to spend?
Right.
Which is where I'm sure the big problem with government that government has with this is that anytime we have anything that we can make more complicated so the average American doesn't understand it, we have all these fabulous experts that we employ to tell us to just empty our pockets and do the right thing. So what does it look like on the federal side there was a flat tax instituted?
Well, let me comment on a couple of things you said. I don't think the federal government is ever concerned about revenues. Okay, they have no. All they do is print money. I mean, yes, they'd like to collect more from us, but it doesn't matter in federal budgeting. It does not matter how many dollars are coming in. They spend what they want anyway. They just borrow or print it. so that they have no parent, there are no parental controls over Congress. These people spend what they want. So yes, they'd always like to get more money from us. I think my back of the envelope calculations, I think that because the tax revenues are down now, I think that a 10% rate would replace the revenues from the current income tax, from the current individual income tax. And I think they would get the same revenues, and we would probably pay no more. But my suspicions are, and nobody can predict anything economically, my prediction would be that with a 10% tax, that people would be encouraged to work, and our economy would boom, and the federal revenues would be greater. I'm not about giving the federal government more money, but I'm looking for a system that's reasonable and fair to the taxpayer.
Right.
So I think a 10% tax would produce, with everybody paying, would produce a greater sense of fairness and would incentivize people to produce, to go to work and produce.
So why do you think the federal government and those that are currently and have been in Congress are not real happy about this?
About the flat tax? They get more lobbyist money. From people looking for special tax provisions, they get lots of campaign contributions and lots of fundraisers from people who want special tax relief on this or that. And it's their money machine, and that's why they're holding on to it so dearly. They don't want something simple and flat.
Well, in fact, you know, you raise such a great point, because just looking at some of even the new immigration bill that's proposed, one of the things that would happen would be, once again, an exemption from businesses in America for how they pay, you know, people. And it's extraordinary when you're telling somebody this, that they look at you as if you're talking. If you never said it was the United States you were talking about, people wouldn't believe it.
They wouldn't believe it.
I get that, you know, every company that comes in, every industry that comes in wants a special write-off or exemption,
right,
or we don't want to be taxed on this. We'll stay here in the country and manufacture or do our business if you just don't do X, Y, and Z. So a lot of this comes out that it's that corporate cronyism.
Absolutely. And the people in Congress get contributions, you know, and their PACs get contributions to get this stuff done. I want to tell you, you reminded me of something. I had a conversation recently with an elderly gentleman who I shall remain nameless, who was a former chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. Okay, and we were talking tax reform, and he asked me for some suggestions. I said, listen, one simplification. If we could get rid of the corporate income tax, just get rid of it, and have that $3,300 billion added on to the individual income tax. I say not only would we eliminate 85% of the complexity of the Internal Revenue Code by getting rid of the corporate income tax, but it would also be more transparent, because we as taxpayers, individuals, we really pay the $300 billion of corporate income tax. We pay it in higher prices. So that we, at the end of the day, we would pay more, $300 billion more in tax, but we had to pay $300 billion less in the cost of goods we buy, and the system becomes more transparent. And this former chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee says to me, Steve, what you said is very rational and very logical, and you know it's very good, but the problem is it's not political. We can't get something like that passed. I wanted to tear out the last few hairs on my head.
I can
this
imagine.
Is what we're facing.
Well,
they're not doing what's right for us.
Set up as a political thing. It's not set up as a way to make. That's why, once again, this current discussion about simplifying the tax system in this country, while that isn't the loudest part of this conversation with all the IRS scandals going on,
right.
It never seems to get very far. There is, you know, every side has their piece of the puzzle. Every corporation wants to come out and scare Americans and say, well, it's going to cost you more because we're going to have to go somewhere else to manufacture if we have to pay any more tax.
Exactly,
and the administration
right.
does as well, and it doesn't matter which administration it is, you know, does the whole scare thing. So what are there countries that actually have a flat tax?
Well, there are some countries that have flatter tax systems. A lot of Eastern European companies are trying this, and they're all doing well. But when you say flat tax, I mean you have to distinguish between individual and business. By the way, I've got to come back to one thing. Both of those bills, and I do the same thing, would get rid of the corporate income tax. Those bills would, in effect, would tax all corporate income at the shareholder level. In effect, make every business a subchapter S. So there's only one level of taxation. Okay, so whatever the business income is, it gets taxed to the shareholder. I would go further than that, and I would take out anything that has to do with creating products, so that in effect all you would be taxed on is labor, either in the form of salary, self-employment income, or in a labor business. So I'd get rid of all tax on all production and sale of property. I think our economy would boom, and that's my guess is as good as any group of PhD economists.
Okay, so what about one of the things that always concerns me and always has is, and I didn't realize this until I went to Australia several years ago, where you go, I'd gone into some place to buy something, and what was on the sales ticket was exactly what I paid, which was extraordinary because I thought, wait a minute, where is the tax? And they had all this hidden tax, and they just, folded it all up into
right.
You didn't know what you were paying.
Right.
And I think that largely ends up being, even though we're a tiny bit more transparent, we know what our state tax is or our city sales tax is.
Right.
But generally, I don't think most people realize how much they're paying in tax from point A to point B anyway.
But people have no clue. People truly, there is a little bit, if you say at the retail sales level, how much state tax there is. But Congress, for example, many years ago did the first and most basic fooling of people when they came in with income tax withholding. You ask a typical person today, how much do you earn? And they say, well, I take home so many dollars. No. How much is your salary before your take home pay?
Right.
The existence of withholding tax has fooled people into not understanding how much tax they're paying. So we don't know. Our system is very, very non-transparent.
Well, don't you find it interesting, too? I love tax at the end of the year when we're getting ready to get everything pulled together, and we start getting closer and closer to tax day, April 15th. I love how people always jump up and down for joy saying, oh, I've got a huge refund. And you always
right.
want to laugh because they make it sound like they won the lottery. It's like you're
right.
getting your money back. It's your money. What do you mean you've got a refund? It's not as if the government's giving you some free thing.
Yes.
My father always said it's your money. It's better to owe than to get back, because why are you giving the government a loan of your money when you could be using it?
Absolutely right. People do not have a clue. People do not have a clue that it's. I've talked to people that they don't understand just what you said. Yeah, I get money back. No, well, for the most part, Dawn, you do know about the refundable tax credits.
Explain that.
Okay, I have a one-page slide on this. Congress decided that we're going to have, under today's system, we're going to have these refundable tax credits, which is a nice name for welfare. You must excuse me. I've got someone in the hospital for 1 second.
I'll see you right back.
If you work, here's my illustration. Person goes into one of these little places that come up in the spring like weeds, Joe's Tax Service.
Right.
He says, listen, I don't work, but I fix things for a living, and I get paid in cash. He says, how much you make? $20,000. So I have a wife and two kids. The guy puts that into the computer, and out here comes the outcome. Income tax liability, zero. Social Security and Medicare tax, $2,800. Refundable tax credits, $7,800. Person goes home with a check of your and my money of $5,000. 9 more years of this, the person is entitled to a Social Security pension at the age of 65. Okay? I hate to be an old practitioner who's technical and whiny about every little thing, but I have one teeny tiny complaint about this. It's all a lie. This person does not work. This is unpreventable fraud. The person that paid no tax in but gets a check from you and me and gets a Social Security pension. Okay? This is your current tax. This is your tax dollars at work, Dawn.
Yes.
Unpreventable fraud. You cannot audit. It's impossible to audit this. Impossible.
Well, so, in fact, we keep continuing to see that the less productive you are in this country now, the more you actually reap benefits.
That's right. And by the way,
you're reaping the benefits from the hard work of everybody else.
Exactly right. And by the way, the fair tax doubles down on this. It goes even further. The fair tax would expand, in effect, that whole concept. It gives more welfare to more people, which is one of the reasons.
So what happens to, because this will be the biggest, this is always the biggest cry from government and every social organization on the planet. You know, what are we going to do about these poor people who don't have a job and blah, 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 and yet they're still filling out tax forms every year. They're still getting money back.
I would do two things. Let me throw out a couple of things to you, Dawn. First of all, as I said, these two bills in Congress and my own would get rid of all credits, all refundable tax credits and all tax credits. So that's a start. Okay. Now, for discussion only. Okay. I know this is not going to happen this week, but Tea Parties seem to like this when I make them this suggestion. Okay. I think under any tax system we have, no matter what the system is, and I put this provision into my flat tax. If you don't pay a certain amount of tax over your lifetime, you can't vote in a federal election. See? Not making them pay, but you can't vote in a federal election, and it's not meant to punish anybody. You and I have to have the right to protect ourselves from the people in Congress who cannot control themselves from stealing our money and throwing it at people who don't vote to buy their votes. Excuse me. Because they can vote today.
I suspect you would have a hard time convincing folks of that one.
I know that. And as I said, I raised that point for purposes of discussion only. But number one is we have to stop giving them refundable credits. Okay, the welfare state needs to be cut back. The welfare state belongs in the private sector. We cut back the welfare state somewhat in the 80s and 90s with welfare reform, and that's got to and all these tax credits are refundable tax credits where people don't pay tax. It's just welfare with a different name. That has to be eliminated, and both of the bills, both of the flat taxes, respect that and cut out. At least they end refundable tax credits.
Right.
Okay. So therefore, anybody with income of any sort would have to pay it under theirs or under mine at least a 10% tax. We have to reverse this trend of getting more and more people. The progressives have taken us to a point where nearly half the people don't pay. You have to see what their goal is to get the people who are actually paying into the minority, and then they're finished because the minority has no voice. We have to push that back where more and more people are actually paying, because then more and more people are affected every time Congress spends some more money. Or tries to raise our taxes.
I don't know if you can answer this question, but it's something that's been on my mind. Because so much largely of what we see, the policies that are being instituted and implemented, are not new, meaning that they've been tried before in other places. This is not a new thing going on. Socialism,
yes.
Communism, whatever label you want to put on it, is not a new thing. This has been around.
Right.
So historically, what has happened to countries who have gone down this path financially, I'm not sure Germany would be a good example because they were pretty broke at the time of Hitler and the Third Reich coming up. But we have seen so much turmoil in Europe, the countries that have tried to keep the nanny state going that have just become bankrupt.
Yes.
What ends up happening? I mean, explain, because I think this is the part that America doesn't seem to get. We've had freedom. We have liberty. In large cases, most people, they gripe about their taxes. But yes. If it doesn't personally touch you, you know, people just go about their everyday life. So what does this look like, the path we're going? What does this look like for us if we continue down this path?
The way we're going now,
yes.
Today? For example, we will become Argentina. Okay, Argentina did this path where the progressives came in after 100 years. They were the third largest economy in the world, and today, forgive me, but Argentina is just a step above a banana republic. That's what will happen to America. We'll become a banana republic.
Well, explain to him though what exactly happened in the sense that. Because I think when people start seeing that you feel it, you see it, you notice things are starting to change, but you can't put your finger on it, what exactly is happening?
What's happening here is what happened in Argentina, which is that the progressives, 100 years of actual progressive control, we've had 100 years of progressive activism. They haven't controlled for 100 years, but just from time to time, you know, Obama today, Johnson, and FDR, they've only been in charge from time to time. So it wasn't like I understand Argentina's the progressives were in charge for the last 100 years, but slowly they keep redistributing more and more wealth. They keep adding more and more social programs, the safety nets. Keep your eye on American safety nets.
Right.
The Democrats and the Republicans are going along with it. The neoconservatives are all expanding the safety nets. And it's such a nice word. We have to take care of people. We have to give them safety nets. It's a way of giving of more and more entitlements, long-term entitlements, taking away from those who produce, and creating this higher and higher government welfare state. And eventually, you know, as Ayn Rand said, you know, people stop producing, and the nation just becomes crippled. You know, Argentina today is really just a step above a banana republic. It was once the third largest economy in the world, strangulation of the private sector. You know, and it can't be done overnight. It must be done. They must do this over a 100-year period. And we just lose. We just more and more of your money goes to buy somebody else something for nothing, and what happens here? Don't know if this is your question, but politicians, they are afraid to say no to a poor person who votes,
right?
And they will never ever take back something that they've given to people. That's why we say if Obamacare gets this last hold in January, where more poor people get free health care, we're finished because no politician ever has the courage to say no.
I think, for the longest time, too, is the language that we allow, the narrative we allow to continue with the idea. How many of us have said, and some still say, you know, the government money or the government dollar, and without, you know, this is a group of people who don't actually generate revenue. That is our money. It should be called the taxpayer. You know, or Steve's money, or Don's money.
Right, it's somebody else's money.
It's not free. I mean, it's not free. There is no such thing. I mean, they're truly the adage, there's no such thing as a free lunch, is true. But what does this look like for, because I tried to explain to people living in the United Soviet state of California,
yes,
what this looks like, and have actually had Congress people use California as the example for why bad policies should expand. So if you're telling a congressperson that, do you understand what cap and trade will do to this country? If you don't understand, look at California, because we have a global warming law, and this is what it has done to industry in our state. to have a congressperson come back and say, well, see, that's why we need it nationally, because then nobody has any place to hide. So what does this look like for the average small, because there's another part of the equation that most people don't understand, is that small businesses employ most of the people, the majority of the people in this country. So what does this look like for the small business owner?
Small business will give up. Small business people are now not going into small businesses. The fellow Bernie Marcus of Home Depot, he said he would not start a business today. And I think that's interesting you put it that way, Don. I think there is a crush. I think that the advent of the large corporation, that they are trying to kill small business. They don't want the competition from small business. And I think to answer your question, I think that small business will decline. People will not go into business. People will just not start business. People will go to other countries and start businesses.
People will leave
America.
Oh, exactly. I was telling somebody recently, I was reading a great article somewhere, and you would have thought it was sort of a vacation guide. It had all these wonderful countries, and you're reading on, and then you realize, oh, this is basically advertisements for expatriates, where you can go to live, how much it's going to cost you, that actually most countries, if not all, except for obviously the United States, have, if you try to emigrate to their country, there is an expectation that you are financially able to support yourself. They will check to see if you have a bank account, what you have in it, that you can provide your own health care, because they will not allow you to get on any government assistance to emigrate to their country. So it was really extraordinary to see all these countries that are saying, and we see them on TV now, you know, come down here, bring your dollars down here, you can retire, you can live like a king in our country.
Doing that's exactly my experience. I had a fellow from California who moved to New Zealand, and he had to prove that he had a net worth, and he had to have some special, you know, his son was working there, and that got him consideration, but he had to show financial responsibility.
Right.
But compare that to Barack Obama, who is advertising in Mexico for people to come here and get food stamps.
Right.
Hello.
Well, this
boggles the mind, because they want future Democrat voters, and we're sitting here and we're paying for all of this.
Well, and the interesting thing too is I actually use Mexico as a big example of actually a country that's working, in the sense that, you know, to emigrate there, you know, you can't do this in reverse, as we have the illegal immigration from Mexico or Central America that we have in this country. You can't do it in the reverse to Mexico. They actually screen, you know, folks. You can't get on, you know, the public dole down there, as it were.
Yes.
So it's always extraordinary to me what a, you know, complete opposite it is here. But So what we would end up having, basically, so we're going to end up having no small business. Small business owners, if they're smart, are gathering up all their marbles, retiring probably somewhere else other than here, because, you know, why keep getting taxed on money you made? And what we're going to end up with are these mega corporations that are basically government-endowed, government-controlled organizations that you may get the opportunity to work for, but, you know, what are the odds? And if you do, what does that look like?
And I tell you, but also, that the good jobs will not be here. They will have all their workers over in India and elsewhere, where they're getting them for a song, and better trained people. So we're not, our economy here will weaken. Our U.S. economy will weaken. We will lose our expertise. We will lose our talents. And we ultimately come to a collapse, or just something barely surviving that
right.
makes
we
do
become
somehow.
Italy. We become France. We become Greece. We become some other nation where that, if especially if you're under 30, you actually have to leave your country to find employment somewhere else. The extraordinary thing to me is, I think as Americans, what we forget too is that so much great innovation happens in this country and has largely done so based on the fact that we are a free market, or at least were a free market economy. So many strides made in medicine, in research, the innovations. Is it a huge surprise that the innovations to computers and the internet and such came out of this country?
Right.
You know, we won't see that anymore.
You won't. You won't. It's hard for anybody to predict what will happen to this economy, but it's not going to be good for this economy. I don't know exactly how it will fall apart or what pieces will go first, but the economy will be hurt dramatically. People don't.
Well, you bring up Obamacare. I think we're starting to see what it looks like when you take a huge portion of the country and you socialize it. We're seeing more and more doctors go by way of concierge medicine, which
yes.
means that they are taking less patients. They can take cash-only patients, or, hey, we're only going to accept private insurance.
Right.
We are seeing doctor shortages. We are seeing legislators now decide that people with less than degrees in medicine can actually now provide health services, even minor surgeries to you. So I think we're already seeing what it looks like when you have the government take control of any single system in this
country. There's about a third of the nation's doctors will be retiring in the next 10 years. And even some of those are now not accepting Medicare and Medicaid anymore. And the classic, I had a couple of doctor friends who said, my sons decided not to go to medical school. They're going to go into finance.
Right.
You know, we're kidding ourselves. But you see, the government, this all comes back to the government's not running an operation. It's not running a business that it's trying to improve things for us. It's an operation of greedy people who are there to try to feather their own pockets. They don't care. They're not trying to create a great system. They're trying to make money for themselves. We tend to think, well, aren't they all trying to make America a richer, better country? No, they couldn't care less. They just care about can they make some money for themselves while they're there and after they're out of Congress.
Well, and if people don't believe that, all they have to do is look at the unemployment rate in Washington, D.C. as the lowest unemployment rate in the country. It is now the heart of where our economy sits. The richest people live in D.C. It has the most concentration of wealth in Washington, D.C. So if you want to know what's happening in a country, look where everything is congregated.
Right. Look, why do people spend so much money to get elected to Congress? Well, what would they make $100,000 a year? Why are they spending millions of dollars to get elected to Congress, to the House or the Senate? They make a fortune after they're finished, or some of them while they're in Congress, they make a fortune from inside.
Well, that's the other part too. This whole idea of retirement. While we're watching this IRS scandal unfold, and we see Miller, the IRS acting commissioner, whatever
yes.
it is, as he's grinning from ear to ear as if he swallowed the canary, who's saying, pretty much, I'm retiring, I'm out of here. Yeah, but you're doing it on my dime. There has been no punishment. You are retiring from government service, quote unquote, and I'm going to pay for it. I'm going to pay for your lifestyle, which will be nice, I am sure.
Well, I the federal government pensions are fabulous. I don't think they're as fabulous as some of the things I've heard about California, Dawn, which are twice as outrageous.
Yeah,
but
don't even
more
me.
Than that, this guy, this Miller, I'll bet you, this fellow, well, he may be retiring from the federal government, but you can be assured that this guy is going to some group now where he's going to get a huge job just because he was the acting commissioner of Internal Revenue Service.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we were saying that, talking with some bloggers the other day, we were saying the same thing. Never see a guy who got fired be so happy. That's because he's gone on to now work as a lobbyist or an analyst or a consultant for somebody. And frankly, he wasn't thrilled with government work to begin with. It was just a place
absolutely.
To be.
There was, and this, we could probably have a million examples, but there was one. There was one of the people, one of the lawyers involved in at the middle of some big scandal, was wound up at Fannie Mae and was getting $10 million a year bonuses while Fannie Mae was losing all our money, and that's
right.
Not the chairman who got $250 million bonus for cooking the books, but this lawyer was getting $10 million a year in bonuses. From Fannie Mae, our tax dollars.
I got to tell you, I think the place that we lose people in the sense of the general public is that most people, we are talking about the amounts of money, the trillions of dollars, the billions in waste and fraud, the corruption, the amount of money, there has been, if there is one thing progressives have managed to do very well and government has done very well, is to ensure in the American psyche that there is a disconnect between the money you work very hard for, that you pay to get your milk and bread, is somehow
right.
completely different than the money that the government spends. And as long as there is this disconnect, people will not look. It is so much different if you have a robber that comes up and mugs you for your money. People are far more egregious than the fact that government has been doing it since the day you started working and paying taxes.
Yes.
And it goes on for far longer.
And borrowing more on
the
side and obligating you to pay that money back at the same time.
Well, and
spending more than they're stealing from you.
Around all your life. I was also talking with an older gentleman who's way beyond what the retirement age used to be. And he said, "Boy, I'm really looking forward to being able to retire in a few years." And I thought how sad it was that here he is, he's well over 65, he's in his late 60s, and he still has to work a few more years. Because I'm trying to save money to sock away for
right.
when I retire. So it wasn't, it isn't even, necessarily because he never said the word Social Security. I think if you're my age, which is, I've got at least another 20, 30 years of working ahead of me. You don't think about Social Security. You're trying to, put money in your own IRA or your 401k or somewhere, or socking it away in cash anymore,
mm-hmm.
Just to ensure you have something to live on. So it is extraordinary that, we're in this position now where, and I really wish younger people that are just getting out of college, assuming they find a job, understand that there isn't going to be, by the way, the safety net for you.
Right.
It will not exist. Since FDR, this whole idea of the New Deal was the New Deal to completely force this country into debt that we could never imagine. I heard yesterday an interesting statistic that
mm-hmm.
there were more families that were getting debt-free and actually saving money now than in the last 50 years in this country. So if we as a populace get that, you would think that, government would get that.
Oh, no. No, and even though we see ads today, I just saw something before the show started, that the debt is right now, the debt that's on the books, forgetting the debt that's not on the books because of Social Security and Medicare, future obligations, but today is $53,000 for every man, woman, child in this country. And people don't get it because half of them don't care. They know they're never going to pay it. There's people, the poor people who don't pay tax, they don't care what the national debt is, what the debt per person is.
I think we need to come at this from the perspective of we know where this leads. This isn't a new this utopia, assuming it really was. If this was a really truly progressives were trying to build utopia, I might actually say, wow, at least you're got a great idea. We know it's not about that. It's about control. It's about having the very fewest people running everything, the totalitarian society, no longer being a republic. By the way, we are not a democracy, folks.
Right.
You already have that one wrong.
Yep.
But I think we have to really educate people. That's why I love what you're doing, because it takes the system, which is just a nightmare. Anybody that does their own taxes still, even if you use TurboTax or something else, you know it's just a nightmare. So, you actually are able to boil this down to, because I look at your stuff, and even though the way it exists now, the way that the tax system is set up now, it's just seriously a foreign language to me. It simplifies things in such a way, and for the first time, frankly, truly is fair and balanced, because guess what? Everybody, no matter what you're doing, you will be paying taxes.
Right.
I think that's the point we really have to drive home for people, that we know where this goes. We know if we stay on this path, where we are headed. If even historically you didn't know, just look at France or Italy or Greece. This is where we're headed. If you want your children to no longer have to work in this country, fantastic, because they probably won't find a job, assuming you can afford to educate them in this country anymore. You yourself, if you finally retire and you're not decrepit, you can actually probably get out of the country and go live like a king somewhere. But it is just what you're doing is such a great thing, because I think it really, for the first time, educates people in a way that we understand. Even though I don't completely understand it, I at least understand the policy issues. I understand where we could be versus where we are. And I think that's truly desirable.
Yes, it is, Dawn. I'd be glad to try and explain as much as possible, but we really do have to, people have to understand the significance of where we are. And where we're going, the government wants the most of the people to be ignorant. Don't worry about it. You're not going to pay it. We, those of us who are paying this, have to understand where this is going. We have to take control back again. And I've got a lot of materials sent out, making it condensed. We've got to get on right now. I think we've got to get on to our people in Congress to sign on to one of these flat tax bills, both of these flat tax bills, and tell them to make the changes that I've suggested, the 10% rate and no deductions. But we have to get our people in Congress to get on board. There was only about eight. There are eight co-sponsors of the House bill, and we've got to get everybody out there to understand some basic things.
In fact, if I'm not mistaken, this administration came in its second term being all about two things: A, jobs, which is laughable, and B, you know, we really want to, you know, talk about tax reform. Anytime they put reform after a word, it might as well be called, this is the thing we're going to tell you we're going to look into, but we don't really care.
Yeah. No. Well, he wants tax fairness. He wants all you rich people to pay your fair share, which he will never define, because fair share is everything. It's all of it.
Right.
So, you know, Obama keeps talking about fair share. We want more. We want more of your money. We have got to get up. We have got to make these rascals.
I always get so angry about this idea about $250,000 was evidently, if you made above $250,000, you were considered, you know, somehow opulent. But
right.
If you live in California, that means you're making your mortgage. So,
right.
You know,
right. Exactly right.
You know,
but
by the way, look a whole lot more desirable too when you start looking at what differences there are from state to state. Because you make a great point in some of the information you said that if we can even start doing this, even if we just start at a federal level, think of how much your state and even your city governments would say, wow, you know, this just simplifies things so much better. But they're drawn to the same disco ball, fancy special interest money that our federal government is. So
they're afraid to lose votes. So they're afraid to take money away from poor people. They try desperately to take money from the smallest.
But they're not poor anymore. See, that's the thing. We now know that you can actually, if you take part in every government benefit that is out there. People are actually making about $50,000 a year, which is more than most working people. So,
Tell me, why are we making welfare more attractive than work? Hello?
So because here's a question I always wanted to ask somebody like yourself, because you deal in policies. You have to just want to, as you said, pull the last few hairs out off your head. Doesn't it just anger you that, first of all, I think a lot of the reason this isn't discussed is because they don't know what the system is now, meaning the Congress people or the senators. They don't know anything about what the code looks like now, unless you're a guy that's, you know, trying to help your buddy get a deal somewhere. You don't know anything about the tax code anyway.
They have no clue.
But they don't, so they don't know about it. But this is the part that always makes me angry, and I always hope it makes policy people like yourself angry. Nobody is out on the House floor or on the Senate floor talking about it.
No, because they know that all these guys sitting there are making money on this deal. They're making money because the system's so complicated. Congress doesn't want to change it. They don't want to. We have to make them change it. And thank goodness there's enough of a cry now across the country that people are getting fed up with this system. Listen, forgive me for this admission, but I made a living out of this system. That's what I did. But I helped the taxpayer, of course. But the fact is, it's incomprehensible, and I'm the first person who wants to change it. And it's for the first time ever in my whole life that I've never heard so much anger against the tax system. The system, not the individuals there, but the system, and the first time there's been this gigantic call for change, and we the people have to make it happen. We have to make a meaningful change from people outside the government, not with a government mentality to keep the complexity there, but someone like me who wants to just really make it simple. I have a simpler answer than this, Dawn, which I'm not going to get politically. I have a much simpler answer than even the flat tax, but it's not going to happen this week. So
I do have another question for you, considering
sure.
that, yes, the IRS is now the huge focus and the bane of all our existence, no matter what day it is. But really, when we're talking about the IRS, we all act as if, you know, it is, you know, Betty Jones, who works at the IRS, is
right.
She's the one that's trying to stick it to me. What I really want people to understand is, you know, it's not the two incompetents in Cincinnati, by the way.
Right.
Where does it begin with the IRS? Who is making the decisions?
Well, it comes – not only does it come from the top, but I'm glad you asked that, Dawn, because it's – and it goes beyond the IRS. Let me go back way up to this guy Vandersloot who was talking today. He was a donor, and he was attacked by not only the IRS, but by the OSHA, but by the FBI, and by a couple of other agencies. And this has happened in several different places. It comes from the White House, and it may not be Barack Obama saying, "Listen, go out and get this guy," but it's the people around him. Okay, it's the people who are the advisors. They know what has to be done. These people who are targeting Republican donors, the people who are targeting the Tea Party people. It starts, I believe, at the highest council. Maybe it's Valerie Jarrett. But it starts at a very high place, and this message gets sent down. And even if though there's no memo, there's no email that says this, okay, it's everybody in that tightly knit core at the top knows that. And anybody who wants to play ball with the administration knows what they want. So even without explicit instructions, in real terms, it comes from the top.
Well, you know,
now, I hope that's enough for a criminal conviction, but in reality, that's where it comes from. It does not come from a low-level person at the IRS. It comes from even outside the IRS, from somewhere above, closer to the president.
Right.
That's my opinion.
I want people to understand, too, that we have a lot of folks, a lot of people who are, by the way, just like you and I, who work for the IRS in various offices doing various duties, who it isn't their job to create policy or you know, even to say which of them get implemented.
Right.
They are basically rubber stampers for what their job is, and I don't want them targeted by folks because they happen to have that as their job. We know that these are policies that are set by people far, you know, higher on the food chain.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Work. Absolutely. I mean, you find that people at all levels that have an attitude one way or another, but still most of this comes directly from the top. These are highly regimented organizations.
Right.
The IRS is extremely highly regimented, and they take their instructions from on top. And the IRS, the top of the IRS takes its instructions from the White House.
Well, it has just been such a pleasure having you on, Stephen, and I hope you come back because there are so many other
anytime.
That